my life have great meaning to me. So I really search to find out if God is here. When I search, I look in Ethiopia. I look all about, looking at Germany, you know, because I'm not prejudiced. Me look for God. Me looking at Ethiopia, I see one man stand up with his name, Emperor Elias Selassie, name King of Kings, Lord of Lords, conquering land of Judah, through the lineage of King Solomon and King David, written in the Bible. Now, one of my thing is that the Bible, them say that King James edit the Bible. Now, my understanding is that if King James edit the Bible, I don't think he will edit it for the benefit of black people. So when the revelation turn out that Haile Selassie is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, coming straight through the lineage of King Solomon and King David, then, you know, we really know that this is a Christ return, because we know in this world, yeah, when the white man, when the white man edit it, he wouldn't edit it in our behalf. You know, he would have more edited to make it look like England going to be the big, big thing. But in the last days, they'll prove out that is Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, you know. And Haile Selassie's name is Rasta. So we are called Rasta, you know, called by his name.
Uh-huh.
And then it's a lot of things. But God swore us saying, him say, when him return and you call upon him. Now this is God. Him say, when him return and you call upon him, your mother and your father will seek you.
By the start of the 1970s, Selassie had become nothing short of a fully-fledged deity to millions around the world, as his international profile continued to grow and the rise of Bob Marley as the world's most famous Rastafarian embedded Selassie's name into pop culture. But just as Selassie's star was reaching full brightness on the world stage, the sun would begin to set on his kingdom. Selassie's poor record on human rights, economic progress, and civil liberties would create a wellspring of grievances for Ethiopia's emerging generation. In his bid to quash various rebellions and maintain power, imprisonments and torture of political prisoners became regular occurrences in many parts of the empire. The Imperial Ethiopian Army would be particularly despised in the Eritrean countryside, where they allegedly committed several atrocities in their numerous skirmishes with Eritrean freedom fighters. But for all the many grievances Selassie's enemies had against him, the final nail in the imperial coffin would not come until the year 1972, when the breakout of a devastating famine in the northeastern province of Wollo led to the death of an estimated 40,000 to 80,000 Ethiopians. In the very same year where thousands were at risk of starvation, the emperor celebrated his 80th birthday in a lavish party which reportedly cost the government over $35 million, which in today's money would amount to over $220 million. The Wollo famine and its image in the media severely undermined Selassie's government's popular support, and the reverence and personal prestige of the emperor was irredeemably devastated. Fearing an impending overthrow, members of the emperor's inner circle even began pleading for him to step down before it was too late. According to some accounts, one of his closest loyalists, Ras Kasa Asarate, came to the palace and threw himself at the emperor's feet, begging for him to abdicate the throne. Although seriously moved by the gesture, the emperor is believed to have responded saying, "Tell me, did King David abdicate? We shall reign as long as the Almighty allows us." Against this general backdrop of dissatisfaction and disapproval of the emperor, a group of radical left-wing army officers, who had long been waiting for the perfect opportunity, quickly stepped up to overthrow the emperor's regime in September 1974. In one fell swoop, over 3,000 years of Ethiopian history and tradition was brutally crushed by the jackboots of a ragtag committee of Soviet-inspired soldiers known as the Derg. In the year following his overthrow, newspaper outlets would begin reporting that Haile Selassie had died under mysterious circumstances, but no one could say where his body was buried. For the Rastafarians, the fact that Selassie's body could not be found was evidence that their messiah was forever living. Nearly 20 years after his reported death, however, a judicial investigation would uncover several signed documents detailing high-level orders from senior members of the Derg mandating the assassination of Selassie for the crime of leading a feudal regime. A man surrounded by myth and mystery from cradle to grave, Haile Selassie was undoubtedly one of the great enigmas of the 20th century. Never in the empire's over 3,000-year history did an Ethiopian emperor hold as much power and influence as Haile Selassie I. But rather ironically, it was this very fact that sealed his fate as the last in his lineage. But before any attempts to pass judgment on Selassie's time as emperor, it is perhaps useful to bear in mind the old adage which states that the greatness of a leader only becomes clear in the light of the regime and rulers that come after him. Selassie may be rightfully denounced for his many mistakes and authoritarian approach, but the 1974 Ethiopian revolution which overthrew his imperial rule would open the floodgates to an era of terror and lawlessness on a scale never before seen in the country's history. Like many other revolutions and uprisings before it, the Ethiopian revolution would ultimately ravage its own children. The political instability and infighting that followed the emperor's overthrow would see over a million Ethiopians lose their lives and an even larger number either displaced or plunged into absolute poverty. And so perhaps when future generations judge Selassie's 60-year reign as regent and emperor, they just might conclude that his services to his country carried more weight than the many great mistakes which he undoubtedly made. Once again, it's KB Taiwo for New Africa. If you've enjoyed this video and would like to see more content like this, then please like and share this video, and also consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/newafrica. Thanks again for all your support, and until next time.
The Festival International de Nuit d'Afrique is back with its free outdoor programming from July 9th to the 24th in Montreal. Meet at the Patière in the Quartier des Spectacles and on the new L'Esplanade Tranquille. For the first time, a second scene for twice as many concerts and free activities for the whole family. On the program, concerts, open-air workshops, DJ sets, restaurants with tropical flavors, and don't forget the Timbuktu Market. Discover the festival like you've never seen it before. Programming on festivalnuitdafrique.com.
God is with us. Thank you. I love my baby. by. Looking at this, they no rolling in the sun. Looking at this, they no rolling in the sun. The girl I love.
Today, for you and me, today, Thanks for tuning in. May you and your family have a great day and a great week. Jah guide, one love.
Radio 90.3 FM in Montreal.
This summer, I'm going to avoid spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Here we are. The New Spins Library.
The New Spins Library.
Hey Montreal, it's a great day out there. You are tuned to the New Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando. We have a special announcement to make today. Fenton Benjamin, longtime partner and volunteer on the show, has opened a YouTube vlog to share the interviews that I do and the music that I bring in. You can find the YouTube vlog by typing the New Spins Library in the search bar of YouTube. Find the channel banner and subscribe, and you'll be informed of the weekly interviews and playlist of music that we have chosen. We hope you start to enjoy the vlog today. Back to the show. We have a tight show for you today with two pre-recorded interviews from the Music Spot and one from Arts and Culture. We'll open the show with headlines by Alice Wu. The first interview is with Chris Thibodeau of Duga Radar. Their new music is worth a listen. The second interview is with Bree Whitworth. Bree's earthy tones bring pop music.